only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff.
AM 790 Talk and Business presents Waterfire Ignites Rhode Island with your host, Bronwyn Dannenfelser. Join Bronwyn to hear about the next Waterfire event in downtown Providence, plus other great cultural events happening in the community. Now, here's your host, Bronwyn Dannenfelser.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Barnaby sitting in for Bronwyn, and we've got two interesting topics we're going to look at today, both one of them related to the holiday and one of them related to the future. It's my great good pleasure, as if our guest, Jeff, are you on the line here?
Barnaby, good afternoon.
Very good, Jeff. Let me give you a proper introduction. For a long time, Waterfire is going in for 23 years, and one of our earliest and longest sponsors has been the Providence Journal. And even going before that, the Providence Journal was a particularly articulate and engaged voice on the entire project to move the river and reinvent downtown. It was you dedicated one or two reporters to it and one story after another. And I think it's one of the unsung heroes of that larger project to build a new Providence. So thank you for that.
No problem.
What I'd like to do is, first of all, acknowledge the importance for moving the river and acknowledge your longtime sponsorship of Waterfire. You were one of our first sponsors. But to talk about how the Providence Journal sees its larger community mission in general, I know you have quite a few different projects you're talking about, and I'll let you describe them in more detail. But this concept of the local newspaper based on local issues and then reinvesting back in the local community is something the Providence Journal has practiced since its founding. So, Jeff, we have Jeff Balin, who's the Business and Audience Development Director at the Providence Journal, joining us at the beginning of the show here. And, Jeff, tell us a little bit more about the philosophy of the Providence Journal and where things like the Providence Journal Holiday Fund got started.
Well, I can tell you a little bit about some of the work that we're doing in the community, and we really see ourselves as a watchdog, really a voice for people who are vulnerable in our community, and really uncovering facts and telling stories about people that may not have a voice on their own. So that's kind of one of the missions that we see ourselves as an independent newspaper. One of the things we're doing this holiday season is raising money for our holiday fund. It's something we've been doing for many, many years. And through in-kind advertising, we raise money for children in need. We support a lot of great organizations, and we give them the ability to reach out to needy families, especially around this time of year.
Yeah, and that's so important. And boy, with this cold weather arriving, you suddenly had that sense of that different sort of deep psychic need of cold weather and shelter and Christmas to be celebrated and other holidays.
Absolutely.
And how can people, this is something that you invite the public to help make possible. I remember also the Summer Fund, but also the Providence Journal Holiday Fund. And tell us how that works. How can people get involved? How can they be part of the Christmas spirit of generosity and community engagement?
Well, people can get involved by going to providencejournal.com/giving, and they can make a donation online. And, you know, from there, that money is distributed to different organizations, and they reach out to those funds go to children in need. People can also make payments by check, and they can send it to the Providence Journal Holiday Fund, and that's care of the Rhode Island Foundation, One Union Station, Providence, Rhode Island, 02903. And every Thursday, we publish a list of donations, and what our readers do is they write special messages. Sometimes they're in memory of a loved one that they lost, or it's in honor of one of their friends, or they give it as a gift. Publish that in the newspaper, which is, you know, kind of neat, and it's kind of fun.
Well, it allows people to add their voice and their compassion and a little bit more of the people's understanding for why they give that gift. Now, these go through a couple of other agencies you work with as well, as in addition to the Rhode Island Foundation, I believe, right?
Right. So we partner with the Rhode Island Foundation, and they help us with our grants. They kind of, you know, advise us, and they help us, identify organizations. So some of the places that we are able to donate to is an organization called Children's Friend,
yep.
Community Care Alliance, Johnny Cake Center of Westerly, Adoption Rhode Island. So really a lot of organizations throughout the state. And what we try to do is be sure that, you know, it's focused throughout Rhode Island. It's not in just one community. 'Cause we really want to impact the entire state.
Now, we just did, we hosted at the Waterfire Arts Center about a week ago a program with Adopt RI where we were helping distribute gifts and other supplies to families and making a larger gathering, because sometimes the adoptee families don't necessarily have a larger network of families. So it was a very great event with many toys and lots of games, lots of noise, as I remember.
Yeah, it's wonderful when you can bring families together, especially families with shared interests such as adoption.
And this also included some families who were foster children or children in temporary homes looking for adoptee families, and the prospective parents were coming. It was quite an interesting interaction with people, and doing it around the Christmas season and with all the Christmas cheer and food was a warm, heartwarming thing to see.
Well, let's hope some children found a home for the holidays this year.
Yeah. I think it's so hard for us to put ourselves in that position. And I hope everyone's gone to see Trinity Repertory's production of The Christmas Carol, because that story by Dickens really is credited with sort of creating Christmas, the sense of when winter comes and the earlier nights and figuring out how one should reach out to everyone. Now, I know the Providence Journal's philanthropy extends far beyond the holiday fund. One of the things I'm most familiar with is the Summertime Fund, which we see usually starting up in the spring. And that's got a similar purpose of trying to reach out and make a more fulfilling life and more opportunities for people who may not have as many opportunities as others. So how's the Summertime Fund work?
Well, it's a kind of a similar concept as the Holiday Fund. You know, the Providence Journal, you know, donates in-kind advertising, and we really depend on the generosity of our readers. Help donate money to enable to send children in need the opportunity to go to summer camp and really, you know, build friendships, learn life skills, and make new friends. And that's something we've been doing since 1972, and we're proud to say that last year, you know, through the generosity of our readers, we raised over $62,000, which is fabulous. And we work with the Rhineland Foundation again to, you know, give grants to different organizations such as the Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA, and the Boy Scouts of America, really you know, giving opportunities to children who otherwise may not have had that opportunity.
Well, that's so important, and allowing them to get out of the city and discovering the, you know, the rest of the state, things like that.
Definitely, and, you know, and the organizations are so grateful, too. You know, we get countless cards and thank you notes, you know, thanking us for the grant, and, you know, and people are so grateful, and just a little bit of money goes a long way in these organizations. They really know how to stretch a dollar. So that's you know, something to keep in mind as people are thinking about donating. You know, these organizations that we're donating to, you know, your donation really has an impact.
Well, it has a big impact. You're in a sense sort of quality assuring them. You're familiar with them. You've worked with them for years. And that efficiency is also, you know, your money is doubled and trebled because there are a lot of volunteers, there are a lot of in-kind donations those different projects get. So I really think of people, you know, this time of year when they're wanting to make a difference. It's one thing to do, and the Providence Journal is a great venue for that. Now, you've also recently just finished up, I think, or maybe it's still going on, the public forum with DCYF about children in crisis and that series of media pieces?
We did. We did that back in September, and what we're trying to do with our public occurrence program, which is a free event, and we do that in partnership with Leadership Rhode Island in Rhode Island colleges, we try to bring an important issue that's happening in the state, and we try to provide an open forum where differing viewpoints can come, debate, and discuss. And really, you know, if you think about kind of, you know, the climate, you know, our country is in, you know, in the media and stuff, these types of things are more important than ever, where people opposing viewpoints and come together and maybe get a little bit closer on the issues.
Well, you know, my sense of that has always been if you can get people to actually talk and look at the facts and the details, there's a lot of agreement right there in the middle, just waiting for us to build the partnership. And conversation does it, so this forum's a great format for that. The Providence Journal used to do these public affairs conferences as well, and I think this is a similar concept, isn't it?
Yes, I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one we did focused on an area coverage we had worked on last year, you know, the DCYF, you know, some of the turmoil that was going on in that organization, a lot of the concern that our citizens had for, you know, for children in DCYF care, and really we got together and talked about, you know, some ways that we can create a better situation for these kids. We got a lot of people together. We got people from the legal system, people from DCYF, the children's advocate, and then we even had two people who were business leaders but had spent time in foster care to kind of get their perspective. You know, it was a great turnout, and we had a lot of Q&A from a lot of people, and you could just feel the passion in the room for kind of the children and, you know, making a better situation for them, which was really exciting for us.
The other great part about these public forums is the way the news cycle works. We tend to look at where things don't work. It's just, you know, we make the default assumption that things are working, which means the media attention tends to be on when that expectation fails and something isn't working right, and it has the unfortunate consequence of people sometimes not being aware of just how much work is being successfully done all across the state.
No, you're absolutely, and I think that's sometimes the, you know, the thing we hear from people. You know, sometimes, you know, we hear that, you know, sometimes all we cover are things that, you know, are not favorable, you know, things that aren't positive. But, you know, we definitely try to focus on stories, you know, that are uplifting and you know, raise people up.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to where we opened is the engagement of the Providence Journal in this whole thing about moving the rivers. It started probably back in 1989, I think, is when we started to discuss that. And people like William Warner, the great architect, did many, many public forums and meetings. But carrying the torch for that and bringing engaged enthusiasm for such a large public works project, the Providence Journal, both editorially and in the amount of coverage you gave it, was a very important part of that story. And that was really what led us to the New Providence.
Yeah, I mean, the transformation the city's had over the past 20 years plus has been amazing. And we're so fortunate to have a great city and a great state like Providence and Rhode Island.
Well, I'm also very grateful that you've also been a sponsor of WaterFire with both, I mean, in addition, you do news media coverage of us, but you're also one of our sponsors each year, and we very much appreciate that as well. So, Jeff, thank you so very much. Jeff is the Business and Audience Development Director for the Providence Journal. Do you have any sort of closing thoughts on as we look at the season? I know you did have some other events you did this year that maybe we should mention. You do the sports awards and things like that.
Yeah, I have a couple quick things. You know, we do high school sports awards in June. We're going to invite student athletes from across Rhode Island, about 600 of them, to come to an awards banquet at the Convention Center. And every year we get a big name celebrity athlete to come and speak to them. You know, last year we had David Ortiz.
Oh, I'm sure that was great, yeah.
And then in September we do our Critics' Choice food event.
And that's another very popular event. I've been to that. That's a great event.
that's a fun one. And then in October we do our Life Expo at Twin River. And they're all you know, what we call our signature events, you know, top notch.
Let's expand those a little bit. So for the sports awards, how does the public participate in that?
Oh, every three times a year we publish what we call our All-State athletes. The all-stars in each sport.
Okay.
And if you're named an all-state athlete, you get to come to the event for free.
Okay, great.
Which is wonderful. And then if you're a member of the public, you want to participate in the celebration, you can purchase a ticket that we sell online, and we advertise that in the newspaper.
So they'll see that in the local sports sections and things like that.
Yes.
And then the Critics' Choice Award, that's always, I think that sells out each year, doesn't it?
Oh, we sold out this year. Yeah. It was our second year, and we sold out well in advance. We're really excited about that, and it's such a fun night. And then people can attend that by, you know.
We should describe that a little bit for you. So this is a food event.
It's a food event, and our food editor, Gail Champa, you know, she knows the food scene in Rhode Island like nobody else, and she invites her favorite restaurants, spirit providers, brewers, dessert makers to come to the special event as a critic's choice. They come and exhibit and give out samples. It's held at Roads of the Patuxent. And we have about, you know, 600 attendees that come. And really what's fun about it is people get to, you know, discover new restaurants, new places they may not have known about before. And that's what's really exciting about it.
Well, and they're also, they're absolutely on their best presentation, and Gail certainly knows the food scene and has a wonderful sense of that. And what's the admission price for the Critics' Choice Awards?
A ticket is $50, which is a great value, because we have over 70 exhibitors there.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. You'll meet a lot of people you'd like to connect with. The whole food community is there. And when do those go on sale? How do people track that? Because that will sell out. I can assure people right now that will sell out.
We'll put tickets on sale around the end of August this year.
Okay, good. And then the last thing is the Life Expo.
Exactly. And we just held it in October. And what the Life Expo is, it's for active adults, age 50 and older. And really what we try to do is we try to bring together a lot of products and services they may have an interest in. You know, things like travel, finance, health insurance, long-term care, those types of things. We have food there, too, as well. And really, they can come and visit with these different businesses and really get information, kind of a no-pressure atmosphere. And then the fun thing is we provide a full day of entertainment. There's giveaways, there's bingo, there's raffles, there's bands. So we had an Elvis performer, a Sinatra performer, and this year we had as our kind of signature act was Jeffrey Osborne, who's a Rhode Island native.
Right. He's great, yes. And where do you hold up?
At Twin River.
At Twin River, that's right. I haven't been to that, but I've heard, I've been to Twin River, but I haven't been to the Life Expo event. And I hear that's very great. There's speakers as well about some of these sub things about, you know, taxes and personal
finances.
Yeah,
there was a presentation about identity theft, which was great, and there was some other demonstrations too as well.
You know, is there how does one link the editorial function of the newspaper with the charitable function? How does one? I think community, locally produced, locally reported newspapers are a very important part of our democracy. And how do you position that?
You know, how do we support things? Our journalists are embedded in the community. They're out there. Making connections with people. You know, a lot of times what happens is a lot of charitable work other organizations do, that's newsworthy. That's news in our state, and we report on that. And that's kind of how we tie some of that in. We were talking about a little while ago how, you know, sometimes there's, bad news in the newspaper, but a lot of times there's good news, and we're doing, like, a lot of those things to highlight that. Today, for example, on the front page of our website, we're talking about Hasbro's International Day of Giving that they're having, where they have all their employees volunteer throughout our state. So that's one way with journalism that we can highlight the good works that's going on.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Jeff. The Providence Journal is a major force in the community, and we thank you for your charitable work and for your longtime engagement. And I thank you so much for spending some time to explain this to us in a deeper sense.
Hey, Barnaby, thank you so much. Happy holidays.
And happy holidays to you and everyone at the Journal and your publisher and all the writers. We interact with your team so many times. So thank you, and we're very, very grateful for your sponsorship as well.
Thank you so much.
So thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
And we have one other guest that I'm going to introduce before we take a break. And she is from another longtime sponsor of Waterfire, which is IGT, which is Angela Wizik. Angela, are you here?
Hi, Barnaby. Yes, I am. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Angela, we're so delighted to have you. I'm going to introduce you, and I know we have a short break coming up, and then we'll continue on the other side. But so IGT, which we used to know as GTEC, tell us a little bit about the connection of the two companies and why we have a new name. I think many people know that, but it's important to clarify that. So,
right, exactly. So in 2015, just not that long ago, GTEC bought IGT, and we merged the two companies, and we took on IGT's name. So the companies had a lot of similarity in the name. GTEC was gaming technology, and International Game Technology is IGT. So you kind of see the similarity
there.
So we are IGT, and we're the largest end-to-end gaming company in the world. Right here in Rhode Island, we work with the Rhode Island Lottery. We are their online lottery service provider and give them everything from software to terminals, everything that allows the lottery to process the thousands of transactions that they do each day. So we do that all over the world. We're in 100 countries, Barnaby, 12,000 employees worldwide, and we have 1,000 employees right here in Rhode Island.
Yeah, that's the international is very important to stress there. It is a big company, and it's a very complicated job, very secure, security conscious. And you also have a great public presence here in the community. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but I just wanted to talk about how much we all appreciate that with the merger and the purchase that IGT is still headquartered in Providence, and it's an important international company.
Yes, we're very proud to be here. It's right where Legacy G-Tech started almost 40 years ago, so we're still here, which is great.
Well, Angela will be right back to continue that conversation. We're going to take a short break and hear from our sponsors, though I look forward to hearing much more about IGT.
Miracle Method has the answer to your ugly tubs, tile, and countertops. It's called refinishing. Whether a surface is worn out, damaged, hard to clean, or simply the wrong color, Miracle Method has the refinishing solutions to make it look and feel like new in just a couple of days at a fraction of the cost of messy remodeling. Call Miracle Method today at 401-751-0487 or log on to miraclemethod.com or just swing by the showroom to see our work and what we can do for you.
If you've fallen behind on your taxes, you know that the IRS is already coming for their money, and they'll get it too by garnishing your wages or maybe even taking your home or business. They call it enforced compliance, and you'd better watch out because the penalties and interest compound daily, making it seem impossible to ever get out of debt. You need to call the experts at Optima Tax Relief. Solving tax issues is all they do. One call to Optima starts the process to stop the demand letters and stop aggressive collection actions. They get to work immediately, fighting to protect your assets and helping you put your tax problems behind you. The IRS writes off millions every year, and Optima knows all the ins and outs of the IRS's tax assistance programs that could save you thousands. So what are you waiting for? Call Optima now for a free consultation.
Call 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
Over the hill, past the fiery gates, my dark future sits there and waits. The shame of steroids fills me with dread, labeled an asterisk, stabs right through my head. Screaming to all, anyone who will listen, Royce isn't the answer. Hard work is what glistens. Asterisk, asterisk, mark of the fraud. Asterisk, asterisk, mark of the fraud. No team, no coach, no glory, no friends. This horrible nightmare never ends.
That was Mark of the Fraud by Roidhead. Hear more at don'tbeanasterisk.com. Brought to you by Ad Council and the U.S. Olympic Committee.
Darren College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I didn't find that working behind a desk, so for me it was a pretty easy decision to make. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard, aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
Your host, Bronwyn Dannenfelser. Call Bronwyn now at 401-437-5000 or 888-345-0790 on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Hello, Angela. So thank you so much. We were just talking about IGT and the international nature of all the work you do. So I think people realize that IGT is involved with gaming and the security of the gaming industry. And of course, that's high technology. But one of your focuses is also is trying to work and interface with communities to build jobs and education and work with youth on the sort of the digital divide issues and getting people better knowledgeable about computers. So tell us a little bit about some of those programs.
Yeah, so our goal is, as a company, you know, we want to be a good corporate citizen, and our goal is to have a significant and positive impact on the communities in which we operate. And as I said earlier, we're in 100 countries. So one of the things that we do, it's called our After School Advantage Program, and it's our signature education program. And it, like you said, it closes the digital divide for disadvantaged children who sometimes get left behind because they don't have the means or access to computers that they need today in order to certainly get through school. And, you know, we are a digital society. So our program, we started this in 1999, and our first computer lab was right here in Providence at the John Hope Settlement House. So today, we have nearly 300 computer labs across the U.S. In the states that we operate, and we've expanded this to Canada, Chile, Colombia, Jamaica, and Trinidad and Tobago. So it's really a great program. Each computer center is specifically designed to provide children with a fun learning experience in a safe environment during those critical after-school hours. So, and we take each lab and we tailor it to meet the needs of the children who attend that particular program. Maybe it's a boys and girls club or a school library. So no lab is the same. And what's great about it is our employees get involved. So our employees actually go and build the labs. So we're very hands-on in the design of the lab, and we stay involved. Just a few weeks ago in Sacramento, California, our team went to work bright and early the Monday after Thanksgiving to install a computer lab there at the Pacific Elementary School. And it was great because Good Day Sacramento, the morning show there on TV, followed the team around and showed the lab from the beginning to the end. So that included painting the center, really giving it a whole makeover, and you know, installing the computers, putting the desk together, all of that stuff. So it's a great program. It's one of the fabulous things. And just to see children who, you know, kids are very savvy these days and they need this technology. So a lot of times it's just a matter of getting homework done.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's a really great program and one that is, you know, started in 1999 and is still very relevant today.
Oh, and will continue to be so. And I think also the... You know, our whole, you know, to get a job, it's not just school, but to get a job, people need to have facility with using computers and understanding how they operate. And if you don't have access to a computer, you are starting off with a tremendous disadvantage. This is that sense of what we talk about, the digital divide, where, you know, people with a lower income level, family income level, may not have access to learn all the stuff that we learn.
Absolutely. Yep, it's very important. And it's very gratifying to go, and our employees really enjoy, and they stay involved. I can tell you, Barnaby, that just a few weeks ago in Jamaica, our employees got together. They have 14 computer labs across the island there in Jamaica, and they went and revisited those computer labs and delivered Christmas treats and goodies and all of the other things that come along with Christmas, and interacted mostly with the students and just to make sure that they answer any questions. And it's a nice, it's a great way for our employees to get involved.
Well, I think that emphasis, which GTEC and IGT have always had, of encouraging employees to go out and volunteer. You have a number of programs where you not only make the opportunity, but you positively encourage people to do that. They can take time off of work for volunteer projects with nonprofits, and they're also, you can engage them with individual projects. Tell us more about the philosophy behind such an approach for your employers.
Well, so the philosophy is that, you know, we really focus on education, social services, and cultural initiatives, and we do this through a number of programs, charitable contributions, nonprofit organizations, and And a part of that is employee engagement. So we want our employees to really feel involved and that they have a part of it. And a great way, you talked about the day off for volunteerism. It's so easy to give an employee a day off to go and volunteer at their favorite nonprofit. And right now around the holidays, so many people are taking time off to go do volunteer here at the food bank or you know, whatever it is. So I do it through my children's school. I'm a mom and, you know, always trying to get to those, whatever, field trip or whatever. We also do a really great thing. It's called Dollars for Doers. And that's where if an employee volunteers 25 hours or more at any nonprofit organization, again, it could be a school or you could coach a little league team or anything like that, the company will give that nonprofit organization $250. Mm-hmm. So again, a lot of employees find that very valuable because they're already volunteering at whatever nonprofit it is, and the company will you know recognize their volunteer service with that, and the nonprofits love it. Another great thing is employee matching gifts. So anytime an employee gives a contribution to, and this is worldwide around the world, to any nonprofit, the company will match that gift. So those are great ways for employees to get involved. And right now, around the holidays, it's, Barnaby, we're very active. Next week, we're actually going to publish our internal newsletter that's dedicated completely to the good deeds that our employees do, not just around the holidays, but all year long. And, we have a big holiday campaign. It was interesting listening to the Providence Journal talk about what they do. You know, we do a lot of great stuff, too, around the holidays. We partner with Children's Friend, and our employees right here in Rhode Island, we adopted 30 families this year to buy gifts for. And, you know, Barnaby, those, you know, some of the wish lists are toys, but it's hats and gloves and warm clothes.
Warm coats, so, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, all of the basic necessities. So Children's Friend is one of them. We do a big food drive here, and a fun thing that we do is we have breakfast with Santa, and our Santa is actually Don Schweitzer, who's our chairman of our Global Lottery Solutions.
Don, absolutely. He'd make a great Santa, of course.
So Don and Sherry are Mr. and Mrs. Claus, and we had 70 children come this year and had breakfast with Santa, and they bring a non-perishable food item and get their picture taken with Santa. And then we also have food boxes set out in all of our locations across the state, and employees donate those. And then we also do the Marines Toys for Tots, and we just took a picture yesterday in the lobby with all the toys, and it's so great to see. And one of our sites, our National Call Center, which is on the south side of Providence, they actually had this contest, Barnaby, where they divided into teams. They bought bikes, and it was kind of a team-building exercise. They divided into teams to see who could put the bikes together the fastest.
Nothing like competition, yeah.
Yeah, and then they donated those bikes to Children's Friends. That was Toys for Tots, so that was great.
And I hope they checked to make sure the brakes were working and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Well, you know, we've had volunteers at Waterfire from IGT and GTEC before that, and you've got a great workforce, really thoughtful, you know, at every level, both leadership and the original concept, right? Because, you were a company that was one of the first in this field of realizing the possibility of computers adding security, adding engagement, adding excitement to the entire gaming industry.
Yeah, we were. And, you know, it's a very, you know, innovation is a word that is kind of overused, but the world is changing and we're looking at all different areas. So it's, we do gaming all over the world. We're into, certainly looking at lotteries, how to keep them advanced, but the technology is really what drives it. And it's an exciting business. It's always changing, Barnaby, and kind of like the world is changing. So lots of exciting things going on. And, you know, in different parts of the world, you you know, you have regulations. So
different in every place, I'm sure.
Yes, exactly. Online gaming is very popular in different parts of the world, and certainly in the U.S., it's certain states are legalizing that. And it's all about the player and convenience and making it entertaining.
And making it fun and security, of course. And the other thing that a lot of these lotteries are supporting are things like schools and all sorts of important governmental functions. So these lotteries are used as a fundraising technique for many, many public-oriented projects.
Absolutely. It's schools, it's the environment, senior citizens. All around the world on the lottery side, the contributions go to good causes. So you can't win if you don't play, and players know that they're donating to a good cause if they lose.
Well, Angela, thank you so much for giving us that portrait of IGT, and we thank you for being a sponsor of WaterFire. We look forward to continuing with you next year. It's so great to have the building just glowing right there at the head of WaterFire at Waterplace Basin, and we're delighted that the international headquarters of IGT is here in Providence. So, Angela, thank you so much, and thank you for all your work in the community.
Thank you, Barnaby. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you as well.
Sponsored by TheraWorks Relief. To relieve muscle cramps in your legs and feet, use TheraWorks Relief. This fast-acting foam can also prevent muscle cramps. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS and Rite Aid pharmacies or TheraWorksRelief.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Steve Pedroti from Intellectual Medicine. It has long been known that the best way to deliver a cure is often intravenously. The Drip Bar at Intellectual Medicine has applied that principle to the delivery of life-enhancing vitamins and supplements. Your safe and gentle infusion will be administered by our expert nurses in the comfortable setting of our Drip Bar. We have infusions engineered to remove heavy metals and other toxins, boost athletic performance, enhance energy, melt away headaches, support immune function, neutralize free radicals, and even help fight illnesses like cancer and heart disease. We are the region's experts in chelation therapy and high-dose IV vitamin C. Whether battling an illness or striving to maintain your best health, let our doctors and nurses at the Drip Bar point you in the right direction. To learn more about Intellectual Medicine, listen to my show every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. right here on WPRO.
Treatments offered have not been FDA approved to treat any disease state and have not been shown to cure cancer.
Hi, Rick Edelman here. You have savings and investments, and you're working hard to save for retirement. Here's good news. Investing doesn't have to be right or wrong, do it or not predicament, and most importantly, you don't have to go it alone. At Edelman Financial, we can help. What are your goals? Are you saving for retirement, second home, college for a child or grandchild? You need to set goals because they determine how you should invest. At Edelman Financial Services, we can help you set those goals and give you a plan to help you achieve them. We've been doing this for more than 30 years for thousands of people just like you, and we've got the experience you need. We have 3 offices in the Boston area, so talk with us, or you can even get our investment management services online. Just visit rickedelman.com, that's ricedelman.com, or call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK.
Advisory services offered through Edelman Financial Services, LLC. Securities offered through EF Legacy Securities, LLC, an affiliated broker-dealer. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Now, back to WaterFire Ignites Rhode Island with your host, Bronwyn Dannenfelser. Call Bronwyn now at 401-437-5000 or 888-345-0790 on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Well, we are back. This is Barnaby Evans sitting in for Bronwyn Dannenfelser. And I've got a very special guest coming up, one of my favorite people in the world, which is the marvelous singer Rose Weaver. And I believe, Rose, you're there. Are you there?
I am here. Hi, Barnaby.
Hi, Rose. It was so great to see you just the other day. And I'm delighted that you could join us today because we wanted to begin a discussion about an exciting thing WaterFire will be doing this spring in association with Brown University and the Center for the Study of Slavery and Justice, mm-hmm. which is working with about the legacy of the woman we know as Mrs. Rosa Parks.
And
Rose, tell me a little little about, you know, she, every time I mention Rosa Parks to people, people's eyes light up, and she is so important to so many people because of something she did on December 1st, 1955, and even school children will be able to tell us what it was, which was the beginning of the Montgomery bus boycott. And when you think of Mrs. Parks, what do you, you know, it's such an amazing story. It was a woman who started really the modern civil rights movement with many, many people joining her. But that was the beginning of work that we're still doing in this country. I don't want to go
still
past
doing.
That issue.
But... I was 7 years old.
Okay.
On that day. And at 7 years old, some people don't think you're aware of what's going on in the world and the community, but I was aware of what was going on in my community living in Atlanta, Georgia, because I knew about discrimination and living under Jim Crow.
Sure.
And I know Rosa Parks, she wasn't the first person to actually refuse, as you know, to give up a seat
right.
on those buses in Montgomery, but she was the one who ignited that whole movement. And you know, I really admire her stamina, but that wasn't the first civil rights act, you know, that she did. She had been involved from the time she was very, very young. And I really respect her. And yes, we all need to know her name and remember her and what you're doing about this whole new project that you're working on. I am just so thoroughly excited to be a part of this movement. It's a movement.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a very interesting opportunity to talk to the entire community about the issues about social justice, about the civil rights movement, about what we've accomplished, about what we're still working on making better. But I think partly why Rosa Parks so strikes people and why she's so memorable is, first of all, she was very dignified. She was very, very quiet, but it seemed to symbolize the fact that an ordinary person could make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
Absolutely.
So important for people to realize that each one of us has an opportunity to make a difference here.
To make a difference. And, you know, all of the regular people also say, I am tired of this.
Mm-hmm.
And some folks look at her as having been an accidental symbol. But as I said, you know, she was an experienced activist from the beginning.
Yes,
from a very young age.
She was, you're right, she was motivated. Her husband was also very engaged with the Scottsboro Boys, and she was aware of the iniquities that were there. And the question was, how do you somehow bring it to the attention of the larger community in a way that will engage action? And she managed to do that with the help of many, many people, included a very young and quite gifted orator whom we know as Dr. Martin Luther King, who was also in Montgomery.
He had just gotten to town shortly before she refused to give up her seat on that bus. He had just gotten to town to become the new minister of the Dexter Street Baptist Church. And they were looking for some kind of a test model to use to push back about segregation. And this was perfect because of who she was and her demeanor and her commitment. And so, you know, they couldn't be accused of using someone who was violent and angry or any of that.
Right.
She was, like you said, dignified and a very calm kind of person. But she was tired. She was tired like all of the housekeepers and seamstresses and maids. And so Dr. King said, she's the one.
Mm-hmm.
And she agreed, and she actually joined the NAACP, I think it was in 1943 when she was 30 years old, but she started volunteering for the NAACP in Montgomery when she was 19. And I think that's about the time, isn't it, 1932, when she married Raymond Parks,
her husband,
who was already involved in the Montgomery NAACP.
Absolutely. She ultimately became very active in the office of the NAACP, working with Mr. Nixon, who was the chair of the president of the local chapter. The whole thing was so we mentioned Dr. King having come there from seminary. It was one of his first, I think it was his first congregation. And that boycott story, the other part of it, when we were talking about what's so wonderful about Mrs. Parks was that it was a sense that an individual citizen can make a difference. But what happened in response to her arrest for refusing, and we should talk about it, she was sitting in a seat that it was the law in Montgomery that if the bus driver, if they ran out of seats for the white passengers, she had to stand and yield her seat. And she just felt that it was humiliating. It was wrong that the bus was a public accommodation and everyone should have an opportunity to sit on it as you arrived. And so what happened
Go on, I'm sorry.
Well, no, Rose, continue.
Well, the bus drivers were awfully mean. You know, the black people had to come to the front of the bus and walk up, you know, get on the bus, pay their money, get off of the bus, and go around to the back of the bus to get into the bus. And after working all day, who wouldn't be tired?
Well, and it's more than just the tiredness. There is a level of disrespect there, and there is a level of, it's almost a constructed outrage there that it is intolerable. You talk to young people now, and they really can't understand the Jim Crow South and just what it was like. But I don't want to pretend that there aren't still issues around all these things. And so it was. What Waterfire will be doing is we'll be hosting in the Waterfire Arts Center. We will be hosting the house that Rosa Parks, when she left Montgomery, she went to Detroit, and
she left Montgomery because she couldn't get any work. She was totally blackballed. Blacklisted. Couldn't work anything. Okay, go on.
And it was more than blacklisted. There were bomb threats. There were telephone threats. And she just, and this was because the Supreme Court came down in support and in favor of her position, and people wanted to make her life untenable. So she, for her activism, one of the many prices she paid was she could no longer hold a job, and she feared for the safety of her and her husband. And so she moved to Detroit, and this is the house that gave her shelter there when she arrived. But even in Chicago, that wasn't the end of the challenges. I think for the whole rest of her life, she remained an activist, but she also had difficulty. People didn't want to hire her. She worked for John Conyers for a while, for a long time, actually.
Yeah, about 65 to 1988.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she lived to be 92 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, yeah, Congressman John Conyers hired her as an assistant, and thank goodness for that. After all she'd done, she would have starved.
Right. Now, that's the issue. And the other thing, what I wanted to mention that Dr. King did, was the community response to her being arrested was the organization, very quickly, of a one-day bus boycott for people not to take the bus. And I think that was on December 5th, 1955, and that was when, Dr. King held a public meeting in one of the larger churches there. It was very overflowing, and talked about, you know, whether it was feasible to continue to hold the bus boycott because they had just planned on it for one day. And he asked the community, and the community said that they were never going to ride the bus again until this was fixed. And as it was over a year of everyone walking to work, forming carpools, at great challenge for the community, but they held together and were successful.
And thank goodness, because it's sort of like what just happened in Alabama. When you get out and vote, you have a voice.
Absolutely.
When you get out and march and take action, and peaceful action, things happen. Things can happen. Change can happen.
And that's partially why it's so important to remember the legacy of Rosa Parks, because this was a woman, a seamstress, a committed, serious, thoughtful person who wanted to make the world a better place. And through her efforts, school children know her name. Nearly everyone knows her name. And she made a difference. And Rose, before we go, and I know we're getting very close to the end of our line here, we are looking forward to working with you over the next 6 months while we figure out the right way to take the opportunity of her house being here in our community to expand this dialogue. And we will have you back on the radio to talk about this more. And we look forward to hearing your performances and the glory of your voice in this larger discussion.
Thank you. And it's a wonderful thing that WaterFire is doing, Barnaby. Very timely.
Well, it's an important discussion that we want to help Providence be part of that community and make it a national discussion as well. And your voice could not be more perfect for it, Rose. So thank you so much for all your work in this area on your own already, quite without us. So thank you so much. And the very best of the Christmas season to you and to all our listeners.
And you too, and happy Hanukkah, everybody, as well.
Thank you, Rose. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, Barnaby. Bye.
Bye-bye. So good night, everyone, and thank you so much, and best of wishes for the holidays. So this is WaterFire signing off. Thank you so much. This is Barnaby.
I Miss in the Morning, Brown University Sports and Celtics Basketball. Your home for talking business, AM 790 WPRV Providence, a Cumulus station.
Net neutrality repealed.